Welcome to your Ability podcast. This is a special podcast. We've got quite a lot of people and new voices in the room today. We've got a topic that we briefly covered with Karen's support a couple of podcasts ago, which is menopause. So we thought, because the topic is so broad and in depth, that we'd do a longer format podcast on menopause. So I've invited quite a few people who are subject experts. Without further ado, introduce colleagues in the room. So if I go around the room, Karen.
Hello, good morning. My name is Karen Snuggs. I'm a business partner at the Business Disability Forum.
Tammy.
Good morning. I'm Tammy Partridge-Smith and I'm Business Development Manager for Mental Health First Aid here at Black Country Healthcare.
Nicola.
Morning, my name's Nikki Rose. I'm a clinical psychologist and I currently work in the Wellbeing Hub and in a learning disability community service.
Jennifer.
Morning, my name is Jenny Williams. I am a vocational specialist within IPS in the Trust.
And Sam.
Good morning, my name's Samantha Wilshaw and I'm the Staff Wellbeing Officer for here at Blackpool.
Okay, so Karen, I think it'd be useful just to give a bit of an overview of menopause, who it affects, durations, and to increase some knowledge about it.
Yeah, so thank you for inviting me along today. So most women will experience some symptoms around the menopause. The duration and the severity of these symptoms is going to vary from woman to woman. But I'm just going to give you a sort of overview of the common symptoms and how they affect women. A lot of these you'll already have heard of, but actually you may not have considered the impact that they have on day to day and in the longer term. So hot flashes. So that's like a short, sudden feeling of heat that starts from within and it makes women incredibly hot and sweaty. If you can imagine the impact on that, some women have hot flashes several times a day. In extreme cases, it can be almost a constant feeling of heat and it makes women very uncomfortable. And if you're getting those night sweats, so there's no respite, you're getting them in the day, you're getting them at night. And what will that do? Well, obviously, if you're getting night sweats, there'll be difficulty in sleeping. But how will that make you feel throughout the day? Tired and irritable and still having to deal with hot flushes. And if you can imagine, you're going through that. And then you've got to go into work and carry out your, you know, your daily activities at work. It can be really, really challenging. And for different women, they don't want to discuss it. They don't want to talk about it. So they're not getting any additional support or an adjustment, perhaps, that might be able to help them. It's not going to take away the symptoms. Absolutely not. But it might be able to help them manage it. It could be something as simple as having a fan on their desk that they don't normally have, or just being able to take themselves away somewhere to try and cool down and make themselves feel more comfortable. Some women will experience issues with their memory and concentration. So if you can imagine, again, how does that impact on their daily life? How does that impact on their work life? There were experiences of women being told that their performance is dropping during menopause. And if you aren't comfortable to talk about it, you're going to have this added anxiety, added concern. So you're already, your mental well-being has already been affected by having hot flushes, night sweats, difficulty in sleeping, problems with memory and concentration. Headaches is something else that a lot of women experience during menopause. And mood changes. And so you can only imagine what the anxiety levels can be for some women. It's important to know that not all women are going to go through the menopause and have a negative experience. Not all women are going to have hot flushes, night sweats, difficulty in sleeping, problems with their memory and concentration. But it's giving you an understanding of what some of the symptoms are and asking you to think about what the impact would be if somebody is having all of these symptoms or even some of these symptoms. Palpitations is something else that a lot of women suffer with during the menopause. And suffer is the right word, because I've been through the menopause and I remember that moment of palpitations, and it almost is bordering on a panic attack type of feeling, because your heart is racing, and it's very difficult to try and in your own mind say it's the menopause, or in your own mind say it'll be fine, take a deep breath. You know, these are the sorts of things that some women are going through. And then there's things like joint stiffness, aches and pains, and reduced muscle mass. So when you think about all of those symptoms and the impact that it has on a woman's daily existence, and combined with that, they may still have children, they still be carers at home, they've got to go to work. Their lives are changed dramatically during menopause. And for an employer and for colleagues, it's important to know that everyone's experience and symptoms of the menopause is unique, and you can't make assumptions. So from the employer's point of view, it's about talking to and listening to the person that's going through menopause. But it's also a little bit about, I mentioned about not making assumptions, but the thing is, it's not just the older lady that goes through menopause. We're going to hear menopause doesn't just start in your mid-40s. There are several women throughout your trust that may well be going through early onset menopause, and that can be sometimes harder to understand and harder to get, you know, to think, well, she's too young and she can't be going through menopause, and be aware of. I also think it's important for you to think about, again, I mentioned it earlier, about the cultural differences and how different cultures approach these almost taboo subjects, and having some sensitivity around that. And I know that you've got an Allies program, which I'm sure will be mentioned, and that's something that is really helpful for different cultures. If their manager, for example, is a male, having somebody that they can talk to who may not be going through the menopause themselves, but has an understanding that this is to come, and so they feel more comfortable talking to them. I think, as I mentioned, it's really important about starting the conversation around menopause. That's why people talking about their lived experience is really, really impactful. Workplace culture is something that's always the hardest to break down the barriers with. And with subjects like the menopause, which are often seen as, oh, we don't want to talk about the menopause, it's a great thing to be talking about it openly and without embarrassment. It's a natural phase in every woman's life, and it needs to be normalised. You know, it's something that we do and happens to us just like other developments in our life cycle. And we should be talking about it. And it's important that you as a trust, and not just the trust as an employer, but the trust as colleagues, understand it and make it a normalised thing, and that nobody should feel embarrassed about it. There's been an increased frequency in the number of articles or TV shows that you may have seen over the last couple of years talking about menopause. However, what I would say is that it's very minimal, and I'm not so sure that I think it's been particularly helpful, because it always seems to talk about menopause in the negative, about a negative experience. It's really, really important that we understand, yes, some of these symptoms are impactful in a negative way, but not everybody is going to go through that, and not every woman will experience all or even some of these symptoms. And so we need to, I keep going back to the phrase normalise the conversation, but it's talking about the good and the bad, and how we can support with our colleagues that we're working next to, and just make sure that menopause isn't put in the bottom drawer and ignored because it's an important part of our life cycle. So that's a little bit of an overview from me. So I'll hand back to Chris.
Thanks, Karen. I think just one of the things I was just going to ask about is there's obviously been, Davina McCall has done two pieces now on Channel 4, I think it was.
Yeah.
Do you think that's helped? You alluded to the fact that some of the articles are quite, can be quite negative and or not particularly in depth. Do you think those films have made a difference?
Well, they've made a difference in putting it front and centre, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And having somebody like Davina McCall, who is, well, I mean, some people say she's an icon, but I won't go that far. But she's certainly incredibly well known. And I think to talk about it is a great thing. But what I really worry about, this is just my own personal opinion about this, and there are four other women on the panel who will have their own views about this, but is that I don't want to scaremonger. I don't want younger women who are thinking, oh my God, what's coming my way? Because the reality is that we don't know what's going to happen to us. And I mean, you know, menopause is a normal, well, I say normal, it's not really normal, but we all go through it, that we get to have to experience it. But what about women that have been diagnosed with cervical cancer, for example, have had to have hysterectomy at a very young age, and the menopause is thrust upon them? You know, it's talking about menopause in all its facets. And the one thing that I don't think that, I think Davina was actually, there was a couple of positive moments, but I just don't want it to be seen constantly as a negative, because I went through it and I hated it, but here I am on the other side, and I'm glad, I'm happy I don't have periods. I'm happy I don't need to go through that anymore. I'm happy I'll never have another baby. So hey ho, there is positives that you can, you know, you can draw from it. You may not think that while you're in it, because it can be very difficult, but I don't want people to see it all as doom and gloom, even though I talk about the symptoms, because they are negative and do have a negative impact. We can get through this, and we do get through this, but there are some people that suffer really, really more than others. And I think that's what we need to understand, and what you as an employer and colleagues need to understand, that we're all unique and we'll all experience it in a different way, even if we're experiencing exactly the same symptoms. You know, we all live it differently.
Thanks, Karen. I think the one thing that stood out for me was that there were a lot of myths around HRT and medication, and that obviously there's a huge spike in uptake following some of the programs, combined with now shortages in production. So I don't know if anybody wants to comment on that, or if you think that's a good thing, a bad thing, or.
Well, there's not a happy pill. So let's just get that right out there. They don't have the solution. Oh, here you go, my dear. Take this and you're going to all be lovely. Doesn't work like that. It can be trial and error. You have to try different types, and, you know, and that's the myth, that HRT is the saviour of, you know, oh, look, we've got this thing that's going to help you. Doesn't work like that. And then you've also got to look at the checks and balances. All medication has side effects. What are the side effects? Are they explained thoroughly? Are women understanding what the difference from not taking it to taking it can mean? And I think that from my own experience, I took it. It didn't work for me. My sister's taken it and it's changed her life. So, you know, and we've got similar DNA, we're sisters, but we lived it differently. So, yeah.
I think from my perspective, HRT has been borderline life-saving. My mood is so low without it that I just don't want to be here. And this is the second time I've gone through these issues with supply. And it's a lot of fun, I have to say. It becomes quite destabilising that you find a medication that's quite effective and then it disappears and you have to switch without notice to another one. And then that disappears because they just sort of move along according to who has supply. And you end up with a less effective medication and a huge amount of stress. I know others I've spoken to before have said they spent an entire week just phoning pharmacies, just trying to find supply. And that's incredibly stressful and can dominate your life for a period. I don't know how others on the call have found that.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, the trying to get hold of the your HRT is quite stressful in itself. I know some of the, you know, it's obviously due to a number of factors because of the fact that menopause is more on the radar now for women because of the, you know, the awareness out there. So the increase in demand. And then there's obviously supply chain disruptions because of COVID and Brexit and other issues. But I think I sort of manage it because I didn't want to change and try different things because I was quite happy with what, you know, because the doctor sort of phoned and said, oh, well, you can either come off it completely or you could try this or you could try that. But I was quite happy with what I was on. So I sort of had to sort of come up with a plan in that I have to give myself about 3 weeks before I know I'm going to run out because I don't want to get to that point where I've run out and then I've got nothing. So I have to plan. So I've got to start phoning around different pharmacies 3 weeks in advance. And I found that the best way is to sort of phone your out-of-area pharmacies because those are the ones that tend to get their HRT supplies. And it's sort of inquiring with those pharmacies and getting a bit friendly with those pharmacies and finding out when they get their quotas. And pharmacies tend to get them at the same time. So you can sort of quite easily say, well, you know, can you let me know when you get your supply? Yeah, same experience. Some weeks you just, I think one particular month, I think I phoned 23 different pharmacies and it was just ridiculous trying to get hold of it. But I think that's not going to change for quite some time. So yeah, that's my experience.
I'm really surprised to actually hear that experience because I've heard a lot about that nationally on the news and I hadn't realised quite how fortunate I am in that I've never struggled to get my HRT supply. So I at least can say it's in some areas it's still okay and quite positive an experience. For me, one of the most frustrating things has been the use of testosterone and not being able to get that in this country. So I've accessed some private menopause clinics and the advice with regards to things like memory and concentration and brain fog was the benefits of using testosterone, which those deficiencies you can't get a prescription in this country for. So I currently pay nearly £100 for a 3 month supply of testosterone. And I've been on it for 6 months and it has absolutely changed my experience of brain fog and, you know, cognitive decline. Some days I could hardly string a sentence together previously. So again, I'd really appreciate a review of the medications that can complement HRT in the UK.
I find this outrageous that we're even talking like this, you know, in 2022, that women that are experiencing the menopause cannot get what they need, what will change, as you just said, Rose, actually change your life. Nicole, change your life. Actually change your life. And I find it incredible that women that I know, one woman in particular I'm thinking of, who went through cervical cancer and went hit menopause early because of that, has had about 7 or 8 different types of HRT until she found the one that actually helped her, and now she can't get that. And it's back. This is a young woman with a very young family. She's got a 2, almost 3-year-old, and she's going through the menopause, and she's found something, and it's like, oh yeah, I found something that's, it's not, it doesn't help everything, but it helps her get through the day, and now she can't get it. And that's the side of things. And I think, Chris, I'm so glad you mentioned it, because I think there will be a lot of women out there. I mean, imagine you had to call 23 pharmacies to try and get your medication. 23 pharmacies. I mean, shame on the NHS for allowing this to happen. Shame on the NHS for allowing this to happen. I mean, there's no point saying shame on the government, but because we all know that that's not on the menopause isn't on their psyche, but shame on the NHS for allowing this to happen to ladies. And it makes me incredibly angry, but it also makes me incredibly sad to think of women out there who are going through something that can be helped because they found something that can actually help them get through the day and they can't find access to it. Shocking.
I think it's interesting, isn't it, because the information that we're getting is that GPs have very little training around this. So I think it heavily relies on the knowledge and understanding of your GP. And I guess that sort of dovetails into when to start, you know, because sometimes you can start very early, which can be beneficial. So there's a heavy reliance on that knowledge. And if you don't push, for want of a better word, and jump up and down and stand up, you may not get that unless you have a very clued up GP. So I think it'd be really useful if somebody could give us an example of sort of their experience, if people are willing to share that.
I'm happy to share mine. It kind of dovetails a bit with what you were saying about lack of GP experience. So I was 34 when I first started showing symptoms. It had been quite a turbulent year and I was a single parent to a toddler and just started my nursing degree. So when my mood deteriorated and my anxiety went up and I stopped sleeping, I just assumed I wasn't coping. It seemed like the obvious explanation. It wasn't until somebody said, waking up at night really hot sounds menopausal, not anything else. So I went to my GP, who was very sceptical. He was very clear it was almost certainly anxiety, but he would do tests to keep me quiet. Genuinely seemed quite surprised when it came back that my FSH levels were much lower than, I know it's higher, I think, than they should have been. So he sort of said, okay, yeah, you've got premature menopause, go away and think about HRT. There was no real advice around the fact that HRT is always a sort of, any medication is a balanced decision, but if you have premature ovarian insufficiency, which is what I have, then it's sort of weighted towards the fact that there are significant risks to your bones, to your cardiovascular system and your brain if you don't have estrogen in the long term. So he just sent me away to think about it and then called me back in at random, rerun the test and said, actually, you're fine. Don't know what happened there. It's fine. Whereas actually, there's supposed to be there's clear guidance on when the test should be done in a structured way to make sure, because obviously everything fluctuates. So my symptoms would come and go because they fluctuate. I would go back to the GP and be told, you're on the contraceptive pill. We can't test, which is actually not accurate. You can't test estrogen levels, but you can test FSH, which is the clearest indication. Eventually, I went back.
So just to explain what FSH is.
I don't 100% know. It's something called follicle stimulating hormone, I believe, and it's about sort of eggs being released, and I believe it goes much, much higher as your body tries to sort it out when you're in sort of when your ovaries are not performing correctly. A bit technical for me, that's about as much as I know.
Thanks.
So yeah, I have loads. It wasn't until Karen started talking that I remember sort of how many symptoms I have. You just sort of push it all to one side and don't remember it. But yeah, I went for several years of sort of depression, anxiety, brain fog, fatigue, mood changes, and eventually came off the pill. They agreed to retest me and I got the proper diagnosis of premature ovarian insufficiency. And like about 90% of women who have POI, it's unexplained. Nobody knows why it happened to me. Then had big argument with my GP, who was adamant that I couldn't have HRT because I'm overweight, and that is again not accurate. There are HRT, you can't have oral HRT over a certain BMI because of the sort of risks of strokes and heart attacks, but anything transdermal is absolutely fine. So I won that by proving to my GP that it wasn't true, and sort of muddled on with a fairly low dose of it. And it wasn't until the Trust did the webinars with the prescribing nurse who was a specialist in menopause, so I realised that actually I was still having a huge number of symptoms and that I wasn't getting nearly the level of treatment I should be. So I actually went to see that prescribing nurse because I kind of lost faith in my GP by that point that they would do anything that really helped a great deal. And thanks to her, my GP has now started to take it seriously. I'm on a higher dose of medication. I'm under a consultant after 8 years. But still, my oestrogen levels are not where they should be because it's been untreated for so long. And it's not clear what the long-term effects are, you know, how my bones are. I still haven't had a scan on my bones, which should have happened 8 years ago. So there's a lot of issues with the GP, and it's had a huge effect on my life. You know, I've moved to a lower stress job now because I just wasn't coping in a job I loved, but it was just the fatigue, the lack of concentration, the brain fog was just absolutely crippling me. I generally try not to think about it a huge amount because the impact it's had on my life of it being treated so badly through sort of the last 8 years, particularly parenting a young child. I didn't do it in the way I wanted to because I didn't have the bandwidth. But on the other hand, I'm really lucky. I'm on a forum called the Daisy Network specifically for premature ovarian insufficiency. And a huge number of those women were diagnosed in their teens, 20s or 30s before they'd had children. And infertility is a huge, huge issue for them. So I'm incredibly lucky that it happened for me after that point. Don't know if anybody else has stories that they want to share.
That's an incredible story. Thanks for sharing that. I think, I think it puts in perspective what Karen alluded to earlier around ages and not making assumptions.
I think my story is similar in age. I think I was probably 39 when I first started sort of like the symptoms of the memory loss and fatigue and just really irritable and rage. And I think I've got three children. They're six. I've got twins who are six and my daughter's seven. But when I was 39, the twins were only three and my daughter was five. And I think it is what you've just said. It's like, it's hard to get through the day. You know, when you're just feeling that, I think the symptoms of, you know, the fatigue and the anxiety and feeling angry, but you don't know why you feel angry. You know, you just, and you're angry at people and you think, why am I so angry? Why am I sad? Why am I angry? Why do I feel like this? And then it's sort of like actually finding out and speaking to people and thinking, this isn't normal. I shouldn't be feeling like this. It isn't a normal thing to be feeling like this. But I think it's having that confidence to go to the GP to actually say, help, I need some help. I don't know what's wrong. And the symptoms that you write down, you think, oh my gosh, they're going to probably section me. Because you think, you know, you write down tearfulness, anxiety, rage, the level of noise. I've got three children, but that level of noise, that noise sensitivity and that like needing to feel like you need to run away, that, and you just sort of can't explain. But yeah, so, and then having a GP that doesn't understand that because you're 39 and they say, oh, well, we'll do some bloods. But, and then when the bloods come back and they weren't at a level that they said that they could prescribe HRT, you just kind of left to go off again. And you think, well, what am I supposed to do now? Because they won't actually put you on HRT because you're not at that right level that the blood results have come back with.
But try telling your body that. Telling your body that, no, calm down because we're not there yet. So can you just stop making me feel like this and getting angry at a tube of toothpaste? Can you just, because I can't have HRT yet.
Yeah. And you feel that sense of guilt for your family for putting them through. So yeah, it was a good, so that was at 39, but it was a good sort of 18 months before. You know, the doctor said, oh, just write down the list of your symptoms and then come back in about a year. And, you know, and then I went back and saw a different GP and I'd probably had like a little bit of a breakdown in the surgery. I was like, you need to help. I need some help. And that's when she said, you're obviously going through the perimenopause, even though your bloods aren't at that level. You're obviously full swing going through it. And that was a different GP, a younger GP who had gone through sort of like some training and she'd been on the program and she said that she's more aware of the symptoms and things. So she was absolutely brilliant and she's the one that
put me on to HRT, and you know, and it is a lifesaver, but it's getting that balance. There's some days where it doesn't quite hit the spot, it doesn't quite, that the fatigue is still sometimes there, and the brain fog and the actual words, you can't, sometimes you're in meetings and you can't find words and you think, what was that word, what am I trying to say? and people's names as well. I could meet people next week, I think, God, I know that person, but I don't know their name. So it doesn't quite sometimes hit the spot. And I spoke to my GP and she said, oh, well, you just need to probably increase your dosage. But then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, I can't increase my dosage because I'm not going to be able to get enough to that supply thing. And so you've always got this anxiety around managing your symptoms at the best that you can, but you can't do it to its full because you're worried that you're not going to get the actual medication. So it is a struggle, and it's a struggle working full time, having three young children, you know, and a husband who sometimes when he's breathing the rage and you just like, you know, bless him, he does his best, but you know. Yeah.
Does anybody want to explain perimenopause? So it's something you referred to, Sam.
I don't know if Karen probably has better knowledge, but I mean, it's sort of like the symptoms that you experience before you sort of, I suppose it's classed as going through actual menopause. So
it's kind of leading up to it. So you'll get some symptoms, but you'll still be having periods. So as your periods get further and further apart, you're going into, you know, full on menopause. But it's really interesting because what you were saying about perimenopause is that it's very often not, it's kind of like when you're saying to a woman who's having Braxton Hicks, it's only Braxton Hicks. Don't tell me it's only. When it's, you know, I'm in that pain. This word only is really, really unhelpful because it might only be only to you, but to me that is experience it. It's not only. And I think it's really interesting that you said that you got the help you required. A, it was from a female. And B, it was from a GP that had gone through training. Not all female GPs are great, so let's not be banging that drum. And not all male GPs aren't great. But it was interesting that there was a distinction between what helped and who helped and who didn't help. And the fact that there had been training. Because, Chris, you alluded to it earlier. GPs need to fully understand, and they can't use the word only. It's not fair because it isn't only.
We really do love our medical colleagues.
So I was probably in about my mid 40s when I think I started experiencing perimenopausal symptoms. But again, even at that age, it still wasn't that evident that that's what was going on. So I went to my GP primarily because I thought I was going insane and that actually I needed to quit work and I was becoming incredibly incompetent. You know, a lot of my job is sitting in a therapy room with people that really need help, and I couldn't find the words. You know, I mean, some days I used to come home from work and think, they must think, well, why on earth is she trying to help me? You know, she can hardly string a sentence together. She looks like she hasn't slept in a week. And you know, I started to feel as though obviously this was all about my stress and anxiety levels. And again, that's the go-to for the GP. It was like, we'll put you on antidepressants, we'll give you strong amounts of sleeping tablets. And so I was in this haze with all of that and just increasingly feeling worse. And then the rage started. I absolutely love that reference to getting annoyed at a tube of toothpaste. I don't think there's anything that's, you know, inanimate that I haven't screamed at some point over the last few years. And then, like that, I can be really cheerful and I can go, oh, look, a robin. I'm so happy. My day. And then something else. And it's just that fluctuating mood swing that just was so difficult. I was feeling at work just such overwhelm. You know, I'd look at an email and I'd think, well, that's it. I don't even know where to start. And then I was increasingly convinced that I was going to have to leave my job and go off. And then I started to see at about the same time a very famous case of a very senior policewoman who had reached really high ranks, and she'd suddenly quit her job and then in retrospect had said that she realised it was as a result of menopause. And actually she wasn't incompetent, and that gave me the confidence to go back to the GP and say, you know, is there something else going on here? You know, suddenly I'm not sleeping. All this is going on, and I'm meditating, I'm walking, I'm exercising. It can't all be stress. And once I'd asked for that help, I have to say I was very fortunate, but it was a female GP who was on the other side, as it were, and said, yeah, you know, expect everything to shrivel up, drop off, fall off. Fortunately, we got a good relationship, so that didn't send me into a spiral. And she said, I can give you some tablets. So we spoke about HRT, and as I say, that's what I've been on, and that's been complemented by consultations at the Newson Clinic, which is where I've got my testosterone from as well. But I think the fact that I've really struggled so much in the workplace and really did consider whether or not I was in the wrong job has really made me passionate about volunteering to be a menopause champion, because the minute I started openly talking about my experience at work, I found so many women sort of pulling me into a corridor and saying, I had my head in a freezer in Iceland the other day. And I think, you know, it's just normalising it. And, you know, I know that recently there's been some discussion from GPs saying, oh, why aren't women just getting on with this? It's a normal part of evolution and ageing. And I think, well, from an evolutionary perspective, we weren't holding down full-time jobs well into our 70s. We'd have been well dead, you know, and we wouldn't have children and we wouldn't have all of this constant bombardment. So I think if there is anything that we can do to make lives easier, then we should definitely be advocating that. And there are plenty of normal life experiences that we go through that we're supported in, so I don't see why it should be any different. So I'm always happy if anyone emails me directly or pulls me to the side in a corridor to talk about my experiences of menopause and help point people in a direction that's, you know, hopefully helpful. I just wanted to end on a positive note, because I really, really like that need to acknowledge that it's not all doom and gloom. So I do a lot of yoga and I go to a lot of day retreats, and I went on a women's empowerment day retreat recently and met a woman who talked about every aspect of bleeding and menopause and everything like that. And she said that what she really likes about being postmenopausal is that she's realised in retrospect that she's lived her life with estrogen goggles on, and that has made her really compassionate and caring, which is great, but to the extent that her own needs have always been secondary, because she sees everything through these estrogen goggles. And she says now they've finally come off, she's able to start to identify and follow her dreams and wishes in life. So instead of always making sure that dinner's on the table or the ironing's done or all this is attended to, she's like, you'll find me walking through the woods doing craft. And she's really discovered what brings her joy in areas she never expected. So hopefully that's a positive thing for people to think about. You know, this is just the start of a new chapter rather than the end of everything. I don't know if that resonates.
Well, it certainly resonates with me. And one of the things I can say is I can see all of you, and we've all laughed and we've all smiled throughout this session this morning, because yes, there are dark days, but there are also incredibly high days where, you know, an act of kindness means a lot to you. So you're crying not because you feel rubbish, but because someone's done something incredibly kind for you. And it might not actually be that incredibly kind in retrospect, but at that time it was. And I want the women that are listening to this who haven't experienced menopause yet, who are going to experience it in the future, please don't sit there worrying about it, because it's going to happen and you'll all experience it differently. And we've talked a lot about, you know, the difficult times, because there are difficult times and you need to know that. But you know something, if we're all still smiling, it's very much like childbirth. You remember it, but you remember it in a differently to how it was when you were going through it. So please hang on to that, because there is definitely light after the dark.
Thanks, Karen. I think that's a very nice summary. I think there's a few things that stand out to me. Number one, you need to sort of really be aware of what's happening to you, and then you have to stand up for that right to be able to access the right treatment and need to push. I guess that's something that I would hope will change in time. I think awareness is starting to be raised. I think there is an acknowledgement that there needs to be different training for GPs. So hopefully, if we did this podcast again, fast forward 5 years, there might be different experiences. There might not, but one can hope. I think it's really interesting, because you all alluded to the fact that you needed some kind of help, which wasn't going to be necessarily much, but just even an acknowledgement of something that was different for you, which sort of leads me on to reasonable adjustments in the workplace in particular, I guess, in our case. So I don't know if anybody had any reasonable adjustments that have worked for you in the workplace. That was quite simple. I mean, the stereotypical thing would be, I guess, a fan. I don't know if anybody has a fan or if that helped. I'm not sure. I don't know if anybody wants to talk about any reasonable adjustments that have been helpful.
I can just add that I know a lot of my colleagues were really struggling during the height of the COVID pandemic, and I work in a building which the windows only open a very small amount, and we were told we weren't allowed fans because they distributed the air and it was an infection control issue.
I remember that.
So yeah, unreasonable that. Adjustments we had.
Right.
not reasonable.
So
can I just say, unfortunately, yeah, the word reasonable always is contentious, because it means different things to different people. And absolutely, that's why we should refer to them as workplace adjustments. They have to be reasonable under the Equality Act, and you can say that, but the word reasonable cannot be used as a preventative. It's only reasonable under the Equality Act, just so that you're aware of that.
I wholeheartedly agree.
I think just linking in with what you've all sort of alluded to in terms of reasonable adjustments, I know that not everyone takes the route of sourcing that official support in terms of OCHealth or line management support. But I think when you can acknowledge what's good for you, what works for you, it's important that we acknowledge what are we experiencing difficulties with. I know Sam mentioned, you know, not getting the right words out at the right time, or there's that overwhelm or that tiredness or rage. I think it's useful to think about what are the adjustments that would work for you. So, for example, for myself, it's about being flexible. So in the workplace, you know, we're all working remotely pretty much these days. And so acknowledging, when do we have those real peaks of working well? Has our sleep affected our performance? Is it best to have a 9 a.m. meeting? Is it better to keep things until 3 o'clock so that we're feeling a bit more refreshed? And so I think it's about really digging deep and finding out what are the things that we know about ourselves? When do we tend to work well? And if we can work flexibly, I think that's something that I've tried to manage for myself unofficially. So keeping the calendar to a point where it's not overwhelmed.
allowing myself that time in between meetings, not jam-packing Mondays and Fridays with things if I know I've got to, you know, finish the end of the working week with some sense of, you know, I've done what I need to, and I'm not fitting everything into a Friday because it's unrealistic, or starting a Monday morning at 9 o'clock with something really, really intense. So I think for me, I've managed my own expectations and managed my own adjustments. So I'm not sure if that's helpful for anyone to think about.
Does everybody in the room, do your line managers know? If not, they will after this, clearly, but does everybody tell their line manager?
Yeah, so I've told my line manager, because I think it's best to be open and honest and to have those sort of well-being conversations, because I think a lot of women going through menopause are sometimes afraid and a bit scared to sort of be open about it, because of they don't want it to seem like a performance issue, or be questioned, well, why haven't you done this yet? When are you doing that? What, you know, and I think a lot of women are afraid to sort of admit it because they don't want to be seen or not thought about for that promotion and that thing. Because, you know, I think sometimes, you know, like Tammy alluded to, if you know, you're trying to work flexibly and stuff, but if you can't quite finish things when you need to, and you need to speak to your line manager because you just can't mentally get that into that headspace, because you do have those days where your mental well-being is affected. If you haven't had a really good night's sleep and you're fatigued and your anxiety is a bit, you know. So I think if you are able to speak to your line manager and have those open conversations, and they are there to support you, and we have got the workplace menopause policy in place, and there's so many resources and support that managers can do to help you. But I think it is just about being flexible and just being kind and compassionate, you know. And as a manager, I would say to just sort of put yourselves in their shoes, and how would you want to be treated? You know, it just with kindness and some compassion, I think, is probably what I would say.
Yeah, I think my current manager knows, and my previous manager was also aware. I found in my current non-clinical role, I can't specifically think of any reasonable adjustments I need, because stuff like brain fog and concentration are my major issues. But I think there would be, I could come up with something, there'd be the flexibility there. In my previous clinical role, what I needed was less stress, and that frankly wasn't an option. I was offered it, in fairness, in the short term, but it felt quite unfair on colleagues and not going to last. So it was, I think there, it was reflecting of the wider pressures in the NHS that it was quite hard to get those adjustments. Not that I ever framed them specifically as reasonable adjustments, if that makes sense.
I don't know if it makes a difference, because when I started my menopause, I was a nurse and I didn't have any issues in talking to anybody about it, because if I can talk about death and dying, I can certainly talk about my menopause. So for me, in the role that I was more than happy to go to my manager and say, right, this is what's going on. When I then moved into a non-clinical role, that was when I couldn't work out at the time, is it my menopause that's made me like this, or is it the fact that I don't have the confidence of being a nurse that made me not want to talk about it? It was really bizarre, but I did. And I had a male young man who was my boss, and I just went into him and I thought, right, how do I approach this? I said, look, I'm going through the menopause. And he was like, and it made me smile. I thought, oh, poor boy. So I just explained what that meant. And I didn't mean to patronise him, but I probably did. But, you know, sometimes women that are going through the menopause, they suffer in lack of confidence generally. So having to then go and tell their boss about I'm going through the menopause, who may be thinking, oh, no, God, not the menopause talk, as well as having to deal with it. So I think these sorts of sessions, hopefully there are men listening to this. Hopefully there are managers listening to this who will have been a bit enlightened and have a little bit more empathy and understanding of the difficulties that some women will go through. But also that we've done some myth busting around menopause, because I think it's good for people to know, as I said earlier on, there are definitely highlights. There are high days. There will be times when you laugh and you smile. And just because you see somebody who's laughing and smiling, thinking, oh, well, what's wrong with that? Well, what are they talking about? They've got the menopause. These are just days out of a cycle. And I think that's important for managers to know.
Yeah, I think the colleagues who have been listening to this podcast for a little while, the Equality Act is obviously instrumental for anybody with disability. The slightly unhelpful term of reasonable adjustments is a legal term, so it's steeped in legality. So what that means is that if you do come forward and tell your manager that you are menopausal, that you have a disability, that you have a protected characteristic, they are by law you are by law entitled to those reasonable adjustments. The operative word being reasonable, it's what Karen referred to earlier. So it shouldn't impact manifestly on business continuity, but it should be able to accommodate your needs within the business and enable business to continue to do what it does. So, for example, the example of reducing your caseload, things like that colleagues alluded to beforehand, would absolutely be deemed a reasonable adjustment. You know, having some changes to your workplace would be a reasonable adjustment. Some flexibility around your work where that's possible would be a reasonable adjustment. So there is a legal framework surrounding that. So just to reassure people that it's not you being a pain, it's not you being awkward or difficult or, you know, asking for things that other colleagues don't have access to. I think that's really, really, really important for people to understand, which then hopefully will give people confidence to start talking to their managers and or the champions and or, you know, trade unions, Occhi Health, HR. There's lots and lots of resources out there to support and just have those conversations to say, okay, this is what is happening. What do you think can be done? And those very, very sort of initial conversations can then have massive changes for you in your workplace. And we've seen it across Karen, you and I've had conversations about this in terms of our disability sort of conversations. These don't have to be big changes. They really don't have to be. Small changes can make huge impacts on people.
Yeah.
So just to put that into context. So I am the only male on this panel. I will never go through the menopause. I would argue that I am attempting to be an ally. We put some sort of narrative around allies for the staff networks, and that we're going to do a lot more work around that. We've put a statement on the menopause intranet website, which Tammy manages, around allyship. Is there anything that people in the room think that would be useful for people to consider? I mean, my view would be very much awareness raising. Just make yourself aware of these things. And that goes across any allyship. Just understand it. If you understand it, you can recognize it, you can see it, and then you can support. That would be my summary. Is there anything else that people want to raise around allyship at all?
I think, like you say, awareness. I think that list, there's a list on the internet, possibly on the intranet, of the 34 symptoms of menopause, because I think there's quite a narrow understanding of what those symptoms are likely to be. I didn't get most of the ones that people think you get. Most of the ones that people find quite crippling are ones most people aren't aware of. So I think, yeah, again, awareness.
So in terms of resources in the trust, I don't know if, because we've got two menopause champions in the room, I don't know if you want to just give a brief overview of what you do, you know, where people can find resources, because there's how many menopause champions now? Is it 20 plus, is it?
We have, I think there's around that sort of figure in terms of our Black Country Healthcare Trust. But we did a project back in January to train individuals who had attended the webinar, which Jenny touched on earlier. So we did a year-long webinar series where we had a menopause specialist in HRT and menopause, and
that nurse, Diane, she educated a number of staff over a period of a year. And it was quite evident, really, from all of the, I think there was over 1,000 people who we reached throughout those webinar series. It was quite evident that women who attended these sessions, they wanted to be empowered with information. They wanted understanding on how to support others and to treat others how they probably felt they would quite like to be treated. So that's where the Champion Programme came about. So the Champion Programme was written and shared right across the Black Country integrated care system. But within Black Country, we've got about 20 champions, which is fantastic because it means we've got 20 individuals placed out in very different job roles, different areas, who are there to be that listening ear, to be that person who can just have that open conversation that's not medicalised, it's not in a professional sense. It forms that allyship, doesn't it? It's someone who, you know, they may not have been through the menopause yet themselves, but they've got that understanding and that passion that they want to prepare themselves with information and knowledge and to share that with others. So it's a fantastic offer that we're able to share to all of our colleagues across Black Country. So Menopause Champions attended the sessions back in January now, so it's still very much in its infancy. So it's great to see that both Nikki and Jennifer, who are both champions, are here on the call today to share their experiences. And it's fantastic, Nikki, to hear you talking about, you know, you're quite happy to be contacted informally and you'll have that conversation, and that's what we wanted from a champion, really. So on our staff intranet page, we will be identifying exactly who those champions are with their consent. So in the very near future, we'll be able to signpost you to who these champions are, how you can contact them, which I think will, you know, be a fantastic offer to our colleagues. The intranet, which we've talked about quite a bit, we've got a staff intranet page. We have the staff health and wellbeing page. And within that, there's oodles of information. But in particular, we've got a tab for menopause. So it was important for us as a trust that we share reliable information. It's got to be accurate. We don't want to signpost people off to information that's perhaps not particularly reliable. So we've checked out all the content ourselves. So there's lots of information there that we feel quite comfortable in signposting and sharing stuff onto. And on the intranet, you'll be able to get access to all the pre-recorded webinars, which was done over a year-long webinar series, which we've talked about today. So if you haven't been able to attend any of these sessions and you're listening today and you want to know what that's all about, then please do give the videos a watch because they're fantastic. You'll see the presentation slides, you'll hear Diane talking expertly about all elements of the menopause. So there was 12 sessions altogether. So each element of the menopause is completely broken down into the physical, the mental, what adjustments can be made, how to reach out. So there's lots and lots of information. So do please visit the intranet pages if you are able to. And then just touching on what Sam said earlier, we do have a set of guidelines, which is fantastic because it gives us that robust document in order to give not only colleagues guidelines, but line managers some guidance on how do they support a colleague if they are approached. We were quite firm that it wasn't necessarily going to be a policy. Because we know that with the menopause, we've already heard a few stories and not one story has been the same. So the menopause journey is very, very individual and very different for everyone. So it's hard to write a policy based on one experience. So the guidelines are very much that. They are guidelines. It will guide both the employee and the employer very much through what the processes are, what stages and what guidance there is. But you can find all this information on the staff intranet pages under the health and wellbeing pages. So do please go and check them out. And if you do want to be an ally, there is a section there where you can pop myself or Chris an email, and do get in touch with us. Let us know if you want to be empowered more and want to know more and be an ally to this really important and often sensitive subject.
Thanks for that overview. That's really useful. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put that link into the show notes as well. So, but if you just go onto the intranet page and just literally put in the search menopause, it'll come up straight away. So it's not hard to find.
One thing that I do want to just mention is I've done it. We've all done it throughout this. We've talked about her, she and women. For anybody who identifies as non-binary or has a different identity, we know you exist. We know that you still go through this, and we want you to know that you've got a voice as well. And it's really important that if there's any of you out there that do identify differently, that would like to be a champion, please get involved, because your voice is probably one of the voices that we hear least. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well said. Thank you very much. A really important point at the end, actually. I think unless anybody else wants to add anything, I think we'll probably wrap up for today. I think it's been an incredibly informative podcast, very, very long, hopefully not too long, and people have managed to stay with us. Really interesting stories. I think, Tammy, you talked about the potential of more webinars in the sort of not too distant future. Is that still something that we're planning?
I think it's something that there's absolutely an appetite for. I know not only from a Black Country level, definitely at a system-wide level, that the topic of menopause is a really important one. So I think never say never, the appetite is there. Yeah, so I think if this is something that staff are interested in, keep your, you know, your ears and eyes open, because I don't think this is going to be the last you'll hear of it. And, you know, over 1,000 women tuned in to webinars which were outside of work hours. That speaks volumes at what the appetite was, because we know it's hard to engage people to come along to webinars, and there's that webinar burnout, but there's absolutely an appetite. So I think just keep a lookout for the future.
And I think for whatever we've said today, and for all the good work that the Trust is doing and the wider awareness raising, it is still a taboo subject. And I think that's really important to acknowledge, that people don't always feel comfortable talking about it. And in particular, if you feel that there's going to be a target on your back, you know, you all talked about it. You all said, I was doubting myself. If you doubt yourself, and you feel you may be performance managed, you might, you know, might fall out of favor within your workplace, guess what? You're not going to say anything. So I think for me, the most important thing is there are lots and lots of people you can tap into in the organization. We named a few of them: trade unions, HR, the champions, Tammy, me. There's loads and loads of opportunities. So if it isn't your line manager, just start to talk to somebody whom you feel comfortable to talk to. I think that's the most important thing. Even if that doesn't lead to anything more other than that, I think that's okay. I think that's probably the most important thing to take away from today. And I guess just understand your symptoms and jump up and down and do the things that you need to do to get the help. And that's not unique to menopause, let's be perfectly honest here. Well, thank you, everybody. I think it's been fab. I've really enjoyed this today, and I've learned loads more about menopause. So unless there's any final comments from anybody, I'm going to close down today and wish you all a great day, and we'll probably speak to you very soon. Thank you very much for listening.
Cheers. Bye.